When we ponder a gospel passage like we've just heard, and the church provides its guidance through the other readings that were chosen, this vision that Daniel has, a vision that we know was very significant in the first century because people would ponder upon it and reflect upon that passage there at that time. We also see Peter reflecting back upon this event, these glorious days, that moment when they were there on the mountain and they were able to experience all that the Lord had prepared, and he reflects back on it. And yet we're still kind of struck as to what actually was happening in the midst of all of that. What was all this event about? Even the Catechism of the Catholic Church describes it as this mysterious event in which Jesus, seen speaking with Moses and Elijah on the mountain, was transformed in appearance in the sight of Peter, James and John, as a moment of disclosure of his divine glory. So we're presented that this is about this disclosure, this transformation, to tell us something more about Jesus, to reveal something of his true character. But the question is, well, what in fact happened? What happened on that day when Jesus was changed and transformed? Now, the word that is used by both Matthew and Mark to describe it is this word that we translate as transfigured. Luke doesn't use the word. He just talks about the changes that happened and what they witnessed. He doesn't actually describe it. Now, in the Greek language, it's the word metamorphosed, which we use that same word to describe that process of a caterpillar going into the chrysalis, being surrounded in the cocoon, and then eventually emerging as a butterfly. So that complete and radical transformation of that insect. We use this word. So meta from the Greek means to change, and morphe means the form. So it's this change in the very form, or the trans is the same. It means that the change in the figure or the form. So that's where we use these words, this language, to describe or attempt to explain. But we know that this is one of those events that, you know, in some ways you just had to be there. You know, when you've had this most incredible experience, something that has changed your life, and you're trying to explain it, you're trying to unpack it, even for your closest friend, and you know that words are just not adequate. Words are not able to describe and explain that moment in any way that even begins to get to the heart of what was actually happening, what you experienced. The words are always going to be too lame. They're not going to have the ability to use it. Now, this word transfigure is used in total 4 times across the pages of the New Testament. So Matthew and Mark in their accounts. But Paul uses it twice. The first is here in Romans 12, when he's beginning to describe the transformation that needs to happen in our own lives. And so it's not about Jesus, it's about us. And so do not be conformed to this age, but be transfigured, be metamorphosed, be transformed by the renewal of your mind, so that you may approve what is the good and well-pleasing and perfect will of God. And then he makes it even more explicit in 2 Corinthians. And we all with unveiled faces, reflecting the glory of the Lord, are being transfigured, metamorphosed, transformed into the same image from glory into glory, just as from the Lord, the Spirit. And we'll come back to this passage a bit later on. So on that day, on that holy mountain, and we don't know exactly which mountain it was. It doesn't tell us in the scriptures where it took place, just that it was on high mountain. Tradition has said that it was Mount Tabor, which is located between between Nazareth and the Sea of Tiberias, or the Sea of Galilee. In Matthew's Gospel, it's more likely that it happened way north up on Mount Hermon. But Mount Hermon, now on the border between Lebanon and Syria, is a bit more difficult to get to. So the tourist groups all go to Mount Tabor. But Moses and Elijah appear with Jesus. Luke's Gospel tells us that they were also transfigured, that they were also shining bright as light. The other, Matthew and Mark, don't give us that detail, just that they were there with Jesus in this moment of splendor. Why those two? Tradition, again, has usually said, well, Moses represents the law, Elijah represents the prophets. Perhaps it's even more than that. Perhaps it's also just that sense of connection that Matthew will make between these two figures. Both were prophets in their own way. Both were initially rejected by the people, but both were able to be vindicated eventually by God himself, particularly after they died. Both remained loyal and faithful proclaimers of God, the covenant and the law, the Torah. And so both are there as representatives of all that Jesus himself is doing, and this whole spiritual sense of who Jesus is, as particularly in the Gospel of Matthew, as the new Moses. And so all of that is significant in that encounter. But what does it mean? So that's what happened, but how do we make sense of this? Well, the first part is that we need to look in two directions. And the first direction that we need to look is earlier. We need to look backwards. So when we hear these words spoken from the cloud in the moment of the Transfiguration, "This is my beloved Son, with him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Now, we should remember these words. These words should impact upon us because we've already heard them. If we're readers of the gospel, we've already seen these exact words and we've heard them spoken. When did this happen? At the baptism of Jesus. And so the exact same words are spoken by this voice, by the Father, as Jesus emerges from the waters of the Jordan River. We hear these same words. And so this echo should connect this event back to the first time, the baptism, and that whole sense that this is an extension of the moment of the baptism. If we're meant to look backward, then we also need to look forward. The church celebrates these two feast days, the exaltation of the Holy Cross on the 14th of September, which just happens to be 40 days after today, 40 days after the 6th of August. And so whenever there's a connection of these 40 days, we know that something significant is happening. Both feast days began in the church in the 4th century, just after the conversion of Constantine. And so both of these events are somehow connected. Jesus himself, at the end of the gospel today, tells them, don't talk about this until after the events that I've just spoken about. So immediately before this passage, he's spoken about the cross. And so now he tells us that all of this will only be understood in the light of the cross. And so we need to look at the cross. We need to look at that other place, the other mountain of Calvary, in order to make sense of what happens on this feast. And so we need, if we're to make sense of the Transfiguration, we need to hold it alongside the gift of Calvary and the crucifixion of Jesus, and particularly looking at it in the light of six different moments. Both happen on mountains. So both happen, as I said, on these holy places, these holy mountains, Mount Tabor or wherever it was, and then on Mount Calvary. The clothes are spoken about in both accounts. The dazzling whiteness and light of the clothes and the Transfiguration, and the fact that Jesus is stripped of his clothing there on Mount Calvary. He's flanked by two, Moses and Elijah, representing the very height of all that Israel had achieved. But on Calvary, we see the degradation of Israel, that it's no longer great heroes of the faith, but these two brigands, these two thieves who were there on the left and right of Jesus, representing everything that had gone wrong with Israel and why the redemption was so necessary. There are the clouds that are mentioned in both cases, the cloud of glory, the cloud of light at the Transfiguration, and the cloud that comes to cover the sun and the moon, to shroud the earth in darkness from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, from midday until 3 p.m. there on Mount Calvary. Peter is present in both. He's there blubbering on, saying how wonderful and glorious the scene is there on the Transfiguration. But at the moment of Calvary, it's Peter who's denying Jesus, who's making these great claims of bravado, but he runs away in his shame and in his confusion. There is this declaration that we've just seen, the declaration that "this is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased," at the Transfiguration. But there is no voice from heaven at the moment of the crucifixion. It's left to a centurion, a pagan, one of the soldiers, to make that declaration that this indeed was the Son of God. And so we're able, through both moments, both experiences, to see what the church is inviting us into, what the gospel is inviting us into, to reflect not on humanity as this glorious experience and spectacle, but as Jesus offers himself and is available to us in his nakedness there on the cross. He reminds us that this is the moment of transformation, that it's in our humanity that we're able to experience and encounter God. That Jesus, in coming down from the mountain, isn't there like Moses bringing more laws. He's bringing that encounter. He's telling us that it's in that moment of discovering that we are the precious daughters and sons of God, that we are able to be changed and transformed. That this is about this transformation for us. So what does it mean for us? How do we make sense of this transfiguration for us? It's in that second passage of scripture that I said from 2 Corinthians, that Moses, when he went up to the mountain to encounter the Lord, his face was transformed. His face was transfigured. It became a vessel of light. And he had to veil his face when he went down to talk to the people, because they couldn't handle the glory of God that was revealed. But Paul is saying, now we, with unveiled faces, now we're able to experience God directly. We're able to encounter the very presence of God. That we're being invited into this experience where we are the ones who are changed and transformed. That we are the ones who are able to experience this very presence of God. And so we're invited with these unveiled faces to reflect into the world the very glory of God because of his love. Because he's offered that love to us and he's offered that salvation to us. And so we're able to be transformed into that same image, the same image of God, from glory to glory. It's a beautiful description of what the Christian life is all about. This is the invitation of the Transfiguration, not just about an event that happened once in history about Jesus, but about the transfiguration of all of us, that we as a church and a community are meant to be changed from glory to glory, to represent the very light of God. Let's indeed open our hearts to the goodness of God and allow the Lord to call us into his glory today.